And good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Friday, May 29th, 2020. Good afternoon, Dave.
Good afternoon, Melody, TGIF.
Yes, and I think the whole country is probably... thankful that it is Friday, although with everything that's going on, I'm not sure it's going to make a difference whether it be Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, and we'll talk about that briefly. What I do want to talk about is the gold prices, and today we had another nice day in gold, slowly as she goes, up $11 in the New York spot price aftermarket at $1731.60. Silver was up. Let me double check this just to make sure that there weren't any last minute changes. No, 1731.40. Silver was up 47 cents today at 1792. And for part of the day, it was actually over 18. Platinum was up a dollar at 832. And palladium was down 12 at 1995. The USDX today was down 11 at 98.37. That was 0.11. Crude oil was up 1.28 at 34.99. And the paper markets today, you have the Dow unchanged, 0.10. 25,400. But the NASDAQ was up 131 points. In fact, they just showed the Dow went into the negative, negative 17.53. I guess we're pretty early on the get-go today, and they just made that change. Down 1753 at 25,383. NASDAQ was up 120 points at 9,489. The S&P was up 14 at 3,044. 10-year yield, that dropped 0.65. It was down 0.06. That's 0.65%. European Asian markets were all down. London was down 2.33%. And, no, that's pretty much, you know, I saw today that Carl Icahn lost $2 billion betting on Hertz. My heart bleeds. But I saw another headline that was interesting, how the economy is reopening, but the jobs cuts keep coming. And that's what I was kind of referencing yesterday when we still had 2.1 million claims yesterday. And you'd think with businesses kind of opening up across this country for, what, a week to 2 weeks, that you wouldn't have seen that significant number and that you'd see a little bit. So came down a little bit, but not that much. So I don't know if they're allowing the unemployment claims to continue or what, Dave, even if they go back to work. I don't know how with the PPP, you know, how that works. Does it show them? So it's really difficult to look at these numbers and know that you're getting any real truth from them. But, I mean, I think all eyes are on Minneapolis. It's a war zone. Have you been watching much of the news today, Dave?
I have.
Anything to report?
Well, I think the most significant, excuse me, one is that one of the former cops has been charged with murder and the death of George Floyd, Derek Chauvin. He was the cop that was shown in the videos kneeling on George Floyd's neck before he died. And so he's in custody and has been charged with murder, according to Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman. So it'll be interesting to see. I haven't seen anything about the other three officers who were there, but it'll be very interesting to see how this will affect the city and surrounding suburbs tonight and the rest of the weekend now that this one former police officer is in custody.
Did you know that those two people worked, Floyd and Chauvin, worked at a nightclub?
Yeah, as bouncers. I heard that last night.
And there was a comment saying they weren't sure if they'd known each other. You know, I'm sorry, if you work as a bouncer in a club, you're gonna know who everyone is, who all the other employees are. I mean, how big could that club?
Irony.
Pardon?
A remarkable irony.
Well, you know, is it? Or maybe there's, you know, maybe there's a little more to it also. You know, but, you know, it's just kind of interesting, too interesting, I thought, for it just to be a mere coincidence. But I think one of the scary things, Dave, they talk about how the wording about spreading it to the suburbs. And we talk about this a lot on this program, about how it can spread into the neighborhoods. And it's just not staying in Minneapolis. It's going all over the place. There's areas all over the country that are rioting. And but it's a scary situation. And so we'll keep a close eye on that and see what happens. And, you know, for the most part, some of the markets got a little rattled today, not much. President Trump said he's holding a news conference on China today, but he offered no details as to what he would say. Is there a time on that, Dave?
Well, it's taken place right before the program started. He announced two things. One, that he was going to cut ties with the WHO, the World Health Organization.
Right.
And complaining that China has total control over it. And also that he's removing the special trade status that Hong Kong has had over the many years because of this new legislation adopted by the National People's Congress in China yesterday. So all that tough talk earlier in the week and last week about what they were going to do to China, that seems to have had a change of heart, Melody.
I saw some of the headlines. I don't know if you captured some of them in the program today, where, I mean, you know, President Xi just isn't going to sit back and be quiet about all this. And I mean, some of his comments is it kind of makes you wonder what the next step is going to be. You know, I mean, what comes after this? He says he's going to attack Taiwan. So, I mean, that's not an idle threat, I don't think.
Well, I didn't see what that threat was. Is that something explicit, or is that just something that someone is viewing as a threat to Taiwan? I mean, I think it's more likely that he may send more Chinese police into Hong Kong to quell what I suspect are going to be ramped up protests, perhaps as early as this weekend, in that city. And now perhaps there's a domino effect that affects Taiwan as well, and this could be part of a new movement by Xi to consolidate power and to show that he's just not kidding or messing around with this one China policy.
Well, it was one of the the guy's name is Li Zhuxiang, and he is one of the most senior generals, and that's what he said today. He told Beijing's Great Hall of People that the People Armed Forces will take all necessary steps to resolutely smash any separatist plots or actions. If the possibility for peaceful reunification is lost, the People's Armed Forces will, with the whole nation, including the people of Taiwan, take all necessary steps to resolutely smash He added, "We do not promise to abandon the use of force and reserve the option to take all necessary measures to stabilize and control the situation in the Taiwan Strait." So
that is really alarming talk in an already ramped up volatile section of the world, and with U.S.-China relations sort of deteriorating again right before our eyes, with that kind of bellicose talk by the military, that could set up an interesting scenario.
Well, he was speaking at the 15th anniversary of the anti-secession law, which gives China the legal basis for the military action against Taiwan. So, I mean, he was saying, you know, this is, I can't believe they have a 15th anniversary of of this, but to where he was speaking. But
Jeez.
And he is the third most senior leader of the China's ruling Communist Party and head of China's parliament. Oh, this is an this is another guy, Li. Well, they both have the same first name. Li Zhanzhu said the same thing at the same event. So, anyway, yeah, it's just something else to, I don't know.
To rock
it's
our...
It's not a place I want to... It's not a place that I want to go to. You know, it's...
Well, it says an awful lot, too, about what our range of responses will be limited to. I suspect, I mean, my fear, my concern is that our administration won't come down on the side of the people of Taiwan and Hong Kong. And that in effect, that could really spell the end of a lot of freedoms in those two areas.
Wow. Well, you know, on, let's see, do we want to talk any more about China?
No, I don't think there's...
Well, we'll take a peek at the, if anything else is said during this press conference, during the program, so we'll keep an eye on that. Jerome Powell said that the Fed's long-awaited program to lend to small and medium-sized businesses is ready to get off the ground. The Main Street Lending Facility, just cracks me up, which will target companies with up to 15,000 employees. That doesn't sound small or medium to me, Dave, has been difficult to set up, but is just about ready to be rolled out. Powell said they're meant to reach out to different parts of the broad space. In the meantime, many of those companies are finding that they can borrow from banks. Others are waiting for us to get our facilities up and running. It is far and away the biggest challenge of any of the 11 facilities that we've set up in addressing the various issues that have come up during the economic lockdown, and the Fed has devised a series of lending and liquidity programs that was targeted at a variety of fronts, Dave.
Virtually all those efforts so far have been directed at functioning of the capital markets, propping up all the major indices here in the U.S. Now, more recent moves have been toward buying up state and municipal bonds to help those cash-strapped governments, and corporate bonds held by companies that saw debt downgrades as a result of the virus. Those programs have come under criticism for focusing more on Wall Street than Main Street. So getting the lending program off the ground has been critical. Powell said an initial term sheet release for the program saw a couple thousand responses on areas for improvement, sending the Fed back to make the appropriate changes. He said, as we've shown, we're willing to learn from experience.
And our dollars.
The loans will be as small as $500,000 and as big as $100 million. Although Powell said, I could imagine us expanding on either end of that range, depending on need. So, I mean, the question I have here is, what in God's name constitutes a small business or even a medium business? I mean, we're talking about loans as big as $100 million and still thousands upon thousands of small, I mean, the mom and pop folks who haven't gotten a penny yet of the payroll protection program loans.
It really is as big as 100 million and more. Unbelievable. And you're right. I went into a small store this morning, and it was actually across the border in Delaware, and it was, walked in and she says, "Oh, you're my next appointment." I'm thinking, what is this woman talking about? And they can only open based on appointments. You have to have
Oh,
an
wow.
appointment to go into the store.
Wow.
And she was telling, I think she was trying to use the guilt trip on us to buy something, in which I did. But she was saying, it's just been horrible. And she says it's really hard. She says we're really struggling. She says it's just not me. It's all of us little shops. That and I felt really bad. And she
Yeah.
said and she's and the thing of it is, it's true, because people do have it, like you go into stores, you do have a tendency to touch things. But she was right there wiping everything down. She sanitized the pen before I used it. She sanitized the counter before I, put my hand. Yeah, so she did a really nice job. But and then you go out to your car and douse yourself in sanitizer anyway. But anyway, seems like, and again, we have to look at these with how long does it take for things to funnel through, or they just. Says despite record high unemployment and massive economic fallout, it seems that fewer homeowners appear to be struggling to make their monthly mortgage payments now than at the start of the crisis. The number of borrowers seeking relief from government and private lender emergency mortgage bailout programs has slowed. 4.8 million homeowners were in forbearance plans as of Tuesday, including an increase of just 7,000 from the previous week. Compare that with 325,000 granted the first week in May and 1.4 million the first week in April. The majority are in the government's program, which allows borrowers to delay their payments for at least 3 months and as long as a year. That doesn't sound so bad. It doesn't seem that people are hurting.
Now,
Or did they use their $1,200 checks to make their mortgage payments?
well, we'll get to that later on in the program. It doesn't appear that there's some certainly some conflicting information based on the consumer spending report that came out today.
All right, we'll talk about that when we get back. Please stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. It's Friday, May 29th. Monday is going to be June. It's hard to believe. And this year is half over, almost. Unbelievable. But hey, there's Dave. Apparently the smart people in this room, the New York Fed press says government debt, it's not a threat. New York Fed President John Williams said yesterday that booming levels of government debt are not posing a broader threat and have been necessary. Even with the federal IOU at $25.6 trillion and counting, hey, there's still plenty of room to spend more. I don't think we're anywhere near that limit, Williams said during a webinar presented by Stony Brook University in Long Island. I just vision this. You know, you say he's spending like a drunken sailor. It's probably how he gave this presentation. The U.S. government is issuing a lot of debt right now, and global investors are gobbling it up. Total government debt has jumped $2.2 trillion just since before the crisis began, and an increase of 9.5%. And you can thank in good part to the CARES Act. That provided more than $2 trillion in rescue funds. For an economy that some economists say is going to contract more than, 40% this quarter. Congress has been debating that there should be additional stimulus with a price tag of $3 trillion. I don't think it's going to be $3 trillion, but it definitely is going to be $2.
Yeah, I mean, the U.S. has already been on its way to a budget deficit in excess of $1 trillion. That's now likely going to be closer to a minimum of $3 trillion this fiscal year. That's according to a recent Congressional Budget Office re-estimate. All of that's resulted in $310+ billion in interest payments in fiscal 2020, a total held in relative check by record low interest rates for government debt, as the Fed has sent its benchmark Fed funds rate to near zero. Now, while Fed officials have expressed a commitment to keep rates low for an extended period of time, Williams said he doesn't see the need for negative rates. Hey! He added that he doesn't see the trillions in lending and liquidity programs that the Fed has initiated will lead to troublesome inflation. I don't see any problems right now in terms of deficits, Williams said. Obviously, in the long run, we'll have to make sure that the fiscal policy in the federal government is on a sustainable path. Okay. He added, though, that he's more concerned now with making sure money gets to the right places, particularly the state and local governments that had to lay off workers during the financial crisis.
Oh, well, it's not what you do, it's what you say, I guess. That's what they've said. But there's many, you know, again, if you look into Mark Zandi, economist at Moody's Analytics, he's the chief economist. He says that the economy could take years to rebound, you know, as it faces these longer-term challenges from the sharpest downturn in history. It was like, yes, hello. He said the damage to the economy already has been too significant. There's going to be too many business failures. He says even as businesses reopen, a lot won't. And so many of the people who've lost their jobs won't be able to get back to work. We have all 50 states now that have reopened their economies to some degree, you know, following these large widespread lockdowns. Zandi had warned the Wall Street is too optimistic about that V-shaped economic recovery because companies face declining earnings and delinquencies and bankruptcies. He said that the employment rate, which surged to 14.7, is what they released. We think it's much higher. Will spike again in May. Then it'll probably settle down somewhere around 10% for the following months, Dave.
Good luck with that, Mark. Aye, aye, aye. He continued, we're going to stay there, 10% unemployment, until we get some kind of medical solution to the virus. And whenever that is, we'll start to see more jobs and lower unemployment in a consistent way. The one thing that most of these mainstream economists aren't saying, Melody, and it's probably a good thing, is that they're not saying when this is going to happen. I mean, we see here and there, some are saying the end of 2021, some saying it could be 3 years. We read today that some are now saying it won't be until mid-decade, 2024, 2025, until we're back. It really is another reason that really does make us wonder if it's going to come back to where it was at all. Zandy, he did say that this is doing a lot of long-term damage to our fiscal health. He said, I don't think we get back to anything we consider normal until, here we go, perhaps mid-decade at the earliest.
But you know what, Dave, you know, again, I mean, you have the stock market, if it holds it, you know, which, you know, we're in the position, well, I'm in the position that it's not going to. I mean, we can have inflation push it up, but that's how people measure the economy. When will that break? When will that, you know, where, how bad does the economy have to be until it breaks from the paper markets and people realize that, hey, that does, it doesn't matter what that number is, I'm hurting. So, yeah. Don't know. But it'll be interesting to find out and see it when it does. And I saw this headline today, and it's not funny, but I thought it was, yeah, so correct me if you don't think it's funny. But when you were talking about the viruses and things, there was an article about the, I guess they were test monkeys, ran away with the virus test samples. I'm thinking even they don't want even they don't want to be tested with any viruses that they're creating.
You're not using me.
And they actually attacked the lab technician too.
Not on this corona. That's classic. Wow.
So anyway, corporations, we talk about debt. They borrowed at more than twice last year's pace. They have already raised more than $1 trillion in 2020 as they race to restructure older debt, pay down bank lines, and raise cash to weather the recession. And don't forget who's buying their debt, too. It's the Federal Reserve. With another roughly $39 billion investment-grade issuance for the week, the total for the year crossed the trillion-dollar threshold. That's about double the amount raised at this time last year. Of the $1 trillion in new issuance, $707 billion of new debt rolled out in the 9 weeks since the Fed announced it would support the corporate bond market. That was just March 23rd. So the Fed bought $707 billion of that debt. Of that new debt is how I'm reading. Wow, amazing.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah,
it's an awful lot. According to Credit Flow Research, there's also been about $160 billion of high-yield debt deals so far this year. Foreign investors looking for higher yields, and domestic institutions and individuals have been steady buyers of corporate debt. For the week ended this Wednesday, investment-grade bond funds took in $7.5 billion. But high-yield bond funds are in high demand and had their third best week ever, raking in $6.3 billion. The best 2 weeks for inflows were in April. Tony Dwyer, who's chief market strategist at Canaccord Genuity. That's provided incredible liquidity to corporate America. Recent offerings have come from Macy's, Applied Materials, Citigroup, Kellogg, Wells Fargo, Tencent Holdings, Stryker, Melody.
Well, I think we'll be able to end this segment with your levity is golden. I think we need something a little lighter, and I thought this was kind of cute, too. What's today's topic?
Well, it's kids and spelling. Melody, happy to say that the upstart X-Spellers, who launched an online spelling bee, that was to fill the void left by the canceled Scripps National Spelling Bee contest, had little trouble running an efficient and sufficiently challenging competition. Last night's winner, Ninth Morale, was apparently no surprise. The 14-year-old eighth grader from Edison, New Jersey, came in with the most extensive spelling resume of anyone in the spelling bee, when the other two remaining spellers misspelled words back-to-back before his turn. Victory in the closest thing to a national spelling bee in this pandemic disrupted year was his for the taking, and Naveen didn't back down. He went through the motions of making sure he understood everything about the winning word, and I'm not even sure I know how to pronounce this, Karoshthi, K-A-R-O-S-H-T-H-I, Karoshthi. Isn't that the way they do it in the spelling bees? That's an ancient and cursive script used in India, Pakistan, and elsewhere in Central Asia before he started to spell. He plowed through it quickly and confidently, as he had all night. Spell pundit co-founder Sharaf Dasari said, "That is correct." So, yeah, you're the champion of Spell Pundit Online National Spelling Bee. Naveen deadpanned, "Thank you." Then the digital confetti fell, Melody. Sharav, a high
just
school
not
junior,
the just, same.
There you go. There you go. Well, Spell Pundit Sharav, a high school junior just 3 years removed from his own close call at the National Spelling Bee, shared his computer screen, which briefly flashed a silent, pixelated image of confetti falling. Yay! A few clicks later, he brought the confetti back, this time with fake crowd applause. The spell pundit bee concluded on the same night Scripps would have held its grand finale inside a packed convention center on the Potomac River outside of downtown Washington. This year's bee was canceled, of course, because of the social distancing restrictions in the nation's capital. National Spelling Bee has always been limited to kids in middle school and elementary school, which means that Naveen and six other finalists in the Spell Pundit Bee will be too old to compete next year. This was also the end of the line for Simone Kaplan, the charismatic runner-up in last year's unusual Scripps Bee. It ended, if you might remember, in an 8-way for first place. Simone bowed out in fifth place last night. On the other hand, he appeared comfortable all night. He has won every major bee he's competed in, except for Scripps, where he finished fifth as a sixth grader. Gosh. Last year's preparation was hindered by an unfortunate car accident, and he placed 11th. He said, "I knew all the words in the bee. I just didn't want to be overconfident, because you never know what can happen in a spelling bee, because no one knows the dictionary completely." Famous understatement, Melody. Naveen took home $5,500 from bee-sponsored The Juggernaut. It's a media company that covers the South Asian community. As for his other interests, Naveen said, "I might pursue something in the competitive science field, but my main focus right now is to do well in high school." And that, Melody, is this week's Levity is Golden.
Those kids fascinate me, you know, when they do these spelling. And I didn't think this word was actually that bad. I wouldn't have known what it meant. But
I know, right?
I mean, you could have kind of sounded it out a little bit.
Yeah, you
could have had a pretty good guess. unless it's pronounced a whole lot differently than
what we think. I don't know if that th is silent or not, and
that's what I was thinking. I wonder.
Fascinating.
But, it is. It is. Well, good for him, and maybe next year they can have the regular spelling bee. Well, you know, you know, there's going to be a little more bad news for the retirement security and Social Security. Social Security's trust funds, now they're predicting might run out 4 years earlier. And you know what, folks? They're always wrong. It's this is the best case scenario in their minds. And 2032 is the year rather than 2036. I'll guarantee you it runs out before then. But anyway, based on how well the economy recovers, this was according to the new report from the Wharton School that's at the University of Pennsylvania. How quickly those funds could be depleted depends on whether there's a so-called U-shaped or V-shaped or no-shaped recovery. A V-shaped downturn would come with a quicker recovery, and then they would extend the trust funds, could last until 2034. So, you know, everybody's hoping and looking for a quick bounce back, but everything that we talk about on this program and what a lot of other people write about tells us that it's not going to have a quick turnaround. So the agency estimated that the funds would be depleted by, and this is for the Social Security Administration, recently released its own projections for the old age and survivors insurance, the disability insurance trust funds. But that estimate did not factor in the effects of the virus. The agency estimated that the funds would be depleted by 2035, and keeping in last year's estimate, however, only 79% of promised benefits will be payable at that time, down from 80% in its previous projection. So.
Yeah, interesting report. And let's not forget that because of all the businesses that are closed, all the unemployment, it's going to be a heck of a lot money, less money collected through payroll taxes in the coming months, possibly years. Trust funds interest income will also be reduced because of lower interest rates that are earned on those excess, so-called excess funds. Meanwhile, low inflation may mean lower future earnings for workers and therefore less taxes paid into the system over the long haul. And Social Security's costs are going to be reduced in different ways, which isn't necessarily good news for future retirees. It'd be from higher mortality rates, lower annual cost of living adjustments because of the lower inflation, and reduced benefits claimed at retirement as a result of lower earned income. So, yeah, we live in interesting times, Melody.
So keep working if you have a job. We're heading into the last break of the day. We'll be right back. Thank you for listening to Financial Survival.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey water filtration systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And for the third and last time today, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Going to take it here to the end as Melody leaves to take care of some business with some important clients who are looking for some shipping before the end of the week. So let's go to Washington first, where Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said this afternoon that Congress will decide whether to pass a final coronavirus relief package in the coming weeks. He said in his home in Kentucky, "We're taking a careful look at a fourth and final bill." He added, "It will be narrowly crafted, designed to help us where we are a month from now, not where we were 3 months ago." Congress is split over how to address economic and healthcare crises created by the pandemic, as tens of millions of people continue filing for weekly unemployment insurance, and state and local governments stare down incredible budget shortfalls. Democrats in the House passed a sprawling $3 trillion stimulus bill earlier this month. McConnell, meanwhile, has stressed he wants to see how efforts to reopen businesses in most of the country affect the economy and the job market before he passes more legislation. Democrats who have pushed for measures including another round of direct payments of $1,200, as well as an extension of enhanced federal unemployment benefits, have argued the need for people to cover vital expenses requires more immediate action. In a separate letter to colleagues today, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer urged the Senate to take more action to address the crisis when it returns next week. He did say that Senate Democrats would try to pass the House-approved bill. I don't think there will be much success there without significant Republican support. Now, McConnell also outlined a set of conditions for the next package. He said it will be written in the Senate and supported by the Trump administration. He added it will also include input from Democrats whose support it will need to pass in the GOP-held Senate. That'll need 60 votes there. He again stressed he would not support a plan that didn't include a measure to shield doctors and businesses from certain lawsuits as the economy reopens. So we'll keep you abreast in the coming weeks. Let you know what we're hearing. Now, the other report out this morning, the Personal Consumption Expenditures Index. Listeners know a measure of the prices that people in the U.S. pay for a broad array of goods and services. That decreased at an annual rate of 0.5% last month. Excluding food and energy, the PCE decreased 0.4%. Latest report from the Bureau of Economic Analysis was released this morning. Now, most listeners know the PCE price index is known for capturing inflation or deflation across a wide range of consumer expenses and reflecting changes in consumer behavior. Perhaps more importantly, it's the preferred inflation index of the Federal Reserve when considering interest rate moves up or down. The index increased at an annualized rate of 1.3% in March and 1.8% in February. Now, another monthly report that was out today, consumer sentiment among Americans, it's remained virtually unchanged during the past month, actually 2 months. Final May estimate a half index point of 72.3 above the April reading of 71.8. According to the University of Michigan's monthly survey of consumers, consumer sentiment surprisingly increased 0.7% in May over April, but sentiment cratered 28% from an index of 100 last May to 72.3 this May. That's a significant drop over a year's period. The survey's chief economist, Richard Curtin, said the CARES relief checks and higher unemployment payments have helped to stem economic hardship. You'll remember that as part of the CARES package, people in unemployment now, including self-employed independent contractors, get an extra $600, I believe, a week from the federal government through, I believe, July 25th. There's also talk about extending that in this next stimulus bill. Now, favorable assessments about the current state of the economy are more frequent near the ends of expansions. The gap between economic growth and the current performance of the economy is likely to grow significantly when the disastrous second quarter GDP results are announced. More widespread price discounting as well as low interest rates have helped to improve buying plans, but those plans still remain well below the levels recorded 3 months ago, adding to consumers' concerns about a significant expected drop in income growth. Inflation expectations rose sharply, putting extra pressure on consumers' abilities to maintain their living standards. Well, we have a solution for that, ladies and gentlemen. It's a bright, shiny store of value called gold. Call us at 1-800-375-4188. For more information, just ask for Melody. Excuse me. Okay, our latest weekly blog, which will be out soon after today's program ends, is about, well, money. Listeners can subscribe to our free weekly blogs and newsletters at dgscoins.com, or you can read them on our Facebook page at DGS Coins. Today's blog, briefly, it's about Americans who are hoarding cash more than ever. Now, in some respects, you could have fooled us, but here we go. You know, the pandemic has Americans hoarding more money than ever as widespread fear paralyzes consumer spending habits, some of which I just mentioned. But listen to this. The personal savings rate hit a historic 33% at the end of April, according to the Bureau of Economic Analysis in that report today. This rate, which reflects how much people save as a percentage of their disposable income, is by far the highest since the department started tracking in the 1960s. April's mark of 33% was up from 12.7% in March. The swiftness and severity of a U.S. economic recovery hinges on whether consumers continue to stockpile cash or start to spend again. Remember, almost 70% of GDP comes from consumer spending. Now, the previous record savings rate had been 17.3% in May of 1975. And yes, the savings rate was elevated above 13% throughout most of the early 70s. The increase in savings came as spending declined by a record nearly 14% in April. Consumers have amassed savings as the pandemic causes unprecedented economic and societal disruption. Gosh, excuse me for that dead airspace. That was some spring pollen, I believe. Diane Swonk, who's chief economist at Grant Thornton, observed, the savings rate is the residual of an extraordinary event. The speed and robustness of economic recovery depends on whether the increase in savings is a result of the shutdown or reflects a more structural change in consumer habits, according to analysts. Saving during the pandemic is especially unique due to the shutdowns. Swonk said there's an aspect of forced savings. There's not much opportunity for many people to go out and spend money. On the other hand, a more structural change in saving and spending habits with scarring in consumers can have intense repercussions for the economy. That happened during the Great Recession, for example, and can exacerbate stagnation, which keeps both interest rates and growth and inflation all low for a long time. Now, we know that as long as money is put in savings instead of being invested, then typically that tends to weigh on interest rates. It tends to curb growth, and it tends to weaken the potential of the economy. And during a crisis or a recession, it's entirely rational for an individual to be more conservative with their spending and savings. The paradox? If everyone across the economy is hunkering down, that only makes a recession worse. The more people save, the less they spend. The less they spend, the worse the recession gets. The worse the recession gets, the more they save. And round and round and round we go. Now, as Melanie mentioned, consumer spending habits will play a large role in whether the economy recovers in a V-shape, a U-shape, a W-shape, a swoosh, whatever. Too Big to Fail Bank of America said checking accounts there have 30 to 40% more money in them last week compared with just 12 weeks ago. CEO Brian Moynihan says that means that the stimulus is still in people's accounts and it's going to be spent. Now, ARK Investor founder Kathy Wood says consumers will lead the economy out of this downturn, making up for the months they weren't able to spend. You can sort of see that happening with all this cabin fever, just from what happened over Memorial Day at beaches and other recreational and entertainment facilities. Woods likens the current savings to the post 9/11 era, when consumers went through a brief period of paralysis after the attack, followed by what was a hearty recovery in spending. And during the SARS pandemic in the earlier 2000s, there was a big drop in retail sales, but just a year later, the data had completely recovered. I suspect that people, you know, like Moynihan and Wood are being overly optimistic in a relatively benign sort of self-serving way. I mean, to keep their laid-off employees engaged, perhaps to keep themselves sane, they feel they have to be upbeat. On the other hand, others say the savings rate was already increasing, though less drastically, before the global pandemic. But that was largely driven by the elderly. Last year, baby boomers were pulling back on spending amid a surge in mortgage refinancing, meaning the older population was saving money each month and not spending. Baby boomers are near or in retirement, and that makes them more skittish than they once would have been when they were making more money and had more time to go until they were going to have to do with less. Now, Diane Swonk expects this trend to continue in the post-COVID era, as boomers are among the highest risk groups for contracting the virus. I'll stop there and just suggest that you be on the lookout for your weekly Friday email for the blog. Thanks for listening. Now, in the remaining 2 minutes or so in the program, let me just see what makes sense to conclude the program. Let's talk, why don't we, about, poverty. Up to 86 million more children could live in poor households by the end of this year. if countries around the world, the U.S. included, don't take more urgent actions to address the economic crisis brought on by the pandemic. That's according to a new analysis by UNICEF and Save the Children, which say, collectively, child poverty is projected to rise by 15% in 2020. Now, the groups looked at World Bank data across more than 100 low- and middle-income countries. The report did not include higher-income countries like the U.S., France, and Japan. A separate analysis that includes those nations will be released later on this year. Now, significant loss of income for many families over the last 3 to 4 months has really left so many of them unable to afford basic necessities, including food, including housing, including other basic needs. The majority of the children expected to be living below their country's poverty line by year's end reside, not surprisingly, in sub-Saharan Africa and, to a lesser extent, South Asia. However, low- and middle-income countries in Europe and Central Asia may see the most significant increases, of up to 44% more children in poverty. Latin America, the overall increase could be 22%. Meanwhile, U.S. billionaires' net worth has grown by 15% over the last 2 months, providing stark proof of the unequal impact of the coronavirus pandemic and the related economic crisis. Well, that's all for today and this week, ladies and gentlemen. Appreciate you tuning in to Financial Survival on behalf of Melody Cedarstrom. Have a great weekend. Be safe. Be healthy. See you on Monday. I'm Dave Allen. It's Financial Survival.